time for Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires. It's live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave.
Hello and welcome everybody to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne on this beautiful day, and we're going to be talking about local topics, local initiatives, local individuals. Today, one of my favorite topics, dumb government stories.
Oh, my favorite too.
So, hey, and if you have a dumb government story, it's happening where you work. It's happened to your family. You read about it. Send it to us because we want to spotlight this and shed some light into it. Dumb government stories. We heard one yesterday from Mike Erdman, the CEO of the Home Builders Association.
Right? That was a good one.
In regulations.
Actually, it wasn't a good one. It was a good story that was very informative.
So what you have is supposedly, let's give them the benefit of the doubt, well-intentioned regulators and legislators who want to create affordable housing choices. But instead, because they didn't understand the market, they ended up with less affordable housing, less quantity, and much higher prices than Portland. So right. Portland enacted this and this zoning restriction and
the builders weren't taking out permits.
They didn't build.
I wouldn't either.
90% their permit went it down year over year by 90% after this went because it doesn't pencil.
No,
it doesn't pencil. So the builder's not going to make any money, not going to develop any apartments. And people are still moving to Portland or having kids and blah, 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 blah. So there's more demand for housing and less of it. And we end up with a housing crisis. And woe is me. And who's to blame? It must be people that build things.
Right. Yeah. Blame the builders.
So dumb government stories. The one I want to talk about today has been in the news a little bit. And it's very appropriate for Oregon. Because some of the people out there, employers, are getting a letter saying they have to let their employees participate in Oregon Saves.
Oregon what?
Oregon Saves. Have you heard about this?
I think I've seen commercials on that.
Okay. So not to be confused with the Oregon...
College fund?
Yeah, college fund.
And this is not that.
No. So Oregon Saves is a response to a need that doesn't exist. So it is definitely a solution in search of a problem. So here's the perception, and we're going to give them the benefit of the doubt that they're trying to do something good. And we're going to involve Senator Wyden in this conversation.
Good.
Because this was an Obama thing. So Obama launched during his presidency an initiative, and I remember talking about it during a State of the Union address, called MyRA.
I vaguely remember that.
IRA, MyRA, and that if you did not have a workforce plan, a 401k or any sort of retirement benefit or work, you can open a MyRA plan, and it's basically the government's going to hold the money for you because they're going to do so much better than the private sector, right? So here's the thing, Dave.
Okay.
There are no impediments to opening an IRA. There are no market restrictions to save money. That's why nobody participated. Let's see here. I think this thing cost $70 million, my RA, so far to administer before Trump administration earlier this year is starting to phase it out because so far they've spent $70 million trying to launch this program. They had $34 million invested in the thing.
Okay.
So we're talking about America. That's less than 10 cents per person in America.
Oh.
You know, $34 million is not a big account. There's some individual advisors who manage $34 million. That is, for the federal government, that's nothing. People weren't doing it. Why weren't they doing it? Because everybody and their brother and their sister wants you to open an IRA with them.
Right.
You walk into your bank. Oh.
Would you like to open an IRA?
Bourne, would you like to open an IRA?
Yeah.
You walk into your credit union. You walk into, I don't know, AAA, Edward Jones, everywhere you go, someone's going to, State Farm guy is definitely going to open an IRA for you.
There are, whether you want to or not.
Any bank whatsoever, there are zero market impediments to saving money, tax deferred, in an IRA.
Okay.
But they want to encourage people to save, so they have to go out and solve this problem that Americans aren't saving enough. Put that on the list of things that I don't think is the federal government's job.
It is not.
So, I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I encourage people to save. I do it every day in my business.
Sure.
However, it's not the federal government's job. And, you know, it just doesn't need to be done. So that's one of those things where the government needs to step in and create a plan to solve a problem that's perceived and thinks that, one, the government's going to do better than the private sector, and, two, that people want it. I mean, who was screaming for this? That Obama administration, who was screaming for it?
Nobody that I know.
Policy people in Washington were saying, oh, Americans not saving enough. What should we do? And da-da-da. Well, it's not everybody has a 401k. And yes, but everybody can open an IRA. Just walk into your bank. Any bank. It doesn't even have to be your bank. Anybody's going to open it for you.
Mm-hmm. Or a savings account for that matter.
So they're starting to close the curtains on the MyRA from the Obama administration.
Okay.
So what does Oregon do? They launch Oregon Saves, their version of exactly the same thing. So
something that's not working.
Got to love dumb government stories. So now it's a mandate. So if you, an employer does not offer 401k, a simple IRA, a SEP IRA, some of these tools, if they don't offer a retirement plan at work, they have to offer this Oregon Saves plan to their employees and participate, and they have to allow them to use their payroll deduction to put money into the state plan and so forth. Now, the employer doesn't have to participate.
Well, thank goodness for that.
Well, let me take that back. They do not have to contribute.
Oh,
right.
Oh, what?
They don't have to contribute.
Okay.
To the employees, my Oregon Saves account, but they do have to administer it. Right. There's an administration. There's a payroll cost. There's some time things. So they have to explain it to their employees, offer it to them. And if they want to participate, then administer it through presumably a pre-tax payroll deduction.
OK.
You with me?
Yep. All right.
So, hey, you know what? Sounds good to me. Don't get me wrong. I want people to save. I mean, it's good for all of us if people get to retirement and they're not just subject to one Social Security check, which is going to increasingly be less and less part of what people need to pay their bills, right? And nobody wants grandma or our parents to be only on Social Security. But saving is good. Let's just agree on that.
Okay. I'll agree with that.
You may be thinking of good things, getting people to save. However, there are no impediments to people to save. You're not going to force them to save.
No.
This is just like, you don't even need to encourage them to save. I mean, if they're not encouraged to save already just for their own, I just don't see the benefit of having this Oregon Saves plan. Right?
Another government program that's not really needed but perceived to be helpful.
Okay. Straight from the New York Times.
Okay.
Got to credit the source here. And that this is being popular. New York's looking at this as well. And I'll quote the article from the New York Times.
Okay.
Oregon was the first state to begin rolling out. We're first, right out there in front, the program last summer. Several other states are varying stages of progress for this same thing, this idea that was just dying at the federal level. New York, California, Connecticut, Illinois. Stop me when you see the pattern. Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey, Vermont, and the state of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Any red states in there?
No.
Yeah. Seattle has to have its own program, of course.
Of course.
They have to have their own minimum wage. They have to have their own program. Yeah. So to me, and I hope you're getting the disconnection there between what the government is doing and needs to do. They could do so much more. Heck, they just do public service announcements. Something, some education. How about putting financial education back in the curriculum of our high schools?
I guess the Feed the Pig commercials weren't working. You've seen those, right?
To enlighten me.
They're Feed the Pig commercials. Feed the Pig is your piggy bank to save money for, you know, for savings down the road. They were suggesting that you take a certain percentage, like your extra change or whatever, every single week, just throw the money into the savings pig, which is the money, you know, your piggy bank.
Yeah.
Well, but there was like a pig guy. He was dressed with a pig head.
Yeah.
Pig suit. And he would tackle the people going, hey, feed the pig.
All right. So, and you know what? There are so many better ways to encourage people to say, how about the the banks and the debit card people would say, how about if we round up every purchase you have and we'll take those 37 cents or 84 cents or 17 cents from your transaction and we're going to defer that into your savings account? That's creative.
Oh, that is. I like that.
That's creative and positive, and the bank's able to open more savings accounts and the whole nine yards. Positive. Doesn't require a federal program, people. It doesn't require a state of Oregon program, people. So, all right. So, Senator Wyden, I promised I'd get to Senator Wyden.
Mm-hmm.
So, he wants to resurrect MyRA. MyRA.
MyRA.
My retirement account.
Okay.
He wants to resurrect it. And he wants to include, he wants to fix it and include like a $500 tax or contribution from the taxpayers, matching contribution kind of thing, like an employer 401k would have, except it's coming.
Wait, he wants to use my money that they have already and put it into matching somebody else's IRA.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how that incentivizes you to save.
Yeah, that's a problem for me.
Yeah. So they claim that the Trump administration continues to use the tax code as a way to benefit those who need it least. So he needs to even the playing field. That's a great phrase they throw out there. You know,
even the playing field. Yeah.
So they want to create an opportunity for working families to save.
I think there already are lots of them.
It's called a savings account.
Yeah,
so
that's one.
Hey, you're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN, Salem's listening.
Newsmakers continues with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne, and we're talking today about some government regulation things, and actually we're going to hit some advocacy things that backfire. Some things that happen that affect our lives and affect our pocketbooks by presumably well-intentioned people who just don't have it right. So we're talking the last segment about MyRA, an Obama program that was dying a death of disuse.
Right.
People were not participating because there was no market demand for it. Spending twice as much money to administer it as actually went into the program. So
that is so crazy.
It is crazy. So let's just keep that going. Senator Wyden, thank you for trying to resurrect that. And, of course, the Oregon's version of that. Hey, and a letter came to the station, actually. This very station. This is a small business in Sam Kaiser, and they're being told by 2020 – maybe even 2019, they're going to have to offer Oregon Saves to all their employees if they do not offer a retirement plan. That's all small employers.
Wow.
So fortunately, this came from a CPA who's educating, you know, the employer. You don't want to go sideways from Oregon Department of Revenue, what have you, and educating the small businesses in the area that are their clients that they're going to have to do this. So, you know, if you don't use one of the major payroll companies, or if you have a payroll person that does your payroll, are going to have institute a new deduction so that all your employees who are not savings have an opportunity to pre-tax through your employment.
Yeah. So,
and the employer does not have to contribute. But anyway, here we have desperately in search of a problem is a solution.
Now, are these like the 401k?
Well, a 401k, a lot of people don't realize, but a 401k can either, the employer can either contribute or not contribute.
Right.
So, but it is a way for people to put money in, before your income's taxed.
Right.
So you get to shave some off as much as you like up to a certain maximum. So that's what a 401k will do. And a lot of companies have nice 401ks and they incentivize people to match. And so some people, if you work for a smaller company and there's not a 401k there, there's not a plant program there. And maybe it's a smaller company that can't afford to offer benefits that match your dollars and so forth. So they're trying to fill that market niche. Unfortunately, there's still no match in this program.
Correct.
So there's no difference between that
right.
and opening a savings account.
Yeah. But like you said, a bank or some kind of financial institution will offer to open up an IRA for you.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, okay, let me back that off because some people are screaming at the radio right now.
Okay.
So it is different than a savings account because they get to save it pre-tax.
Correct.
Okay. So that's right. So it's no real difference from a personal IRA. Okay. So the one advantage that we're going to have to throw at them, you know, since I'm complaining about, the one advantage is that it will be automatic through your pay, through your paycheck.
Correct.
You know, you'll be saving before you see the money.
So which means you won't miss it.
You know, it's one thing, the best thing that ever happened to government is payroll deductions.
Yeah, right.
Right. You just picture somebody getting paid and here's all of your pay and here's the stack of dollars. Stand next to her and take from that stack of dollars the state tax man, the federal tax man, the Social Security tax man, the, you know, and on and on.
Right.
And then you get a revolution. But the fact that we make it so easy to come out of our paychecks and we don't see that stack of greenbacks
disappear
makes it more palatable to the people. So with the savings plan, and honestly, I would encourage it to, you save it before you see it. If it's in our bank balance, we're going to spend it. That's what Americans do.
Yeah.
Most of us.
That's a given.
If it's in our bank balance, we're going to spend it.
I know I do.
If you save on payday, those are the people that are most successful, honestly, in terms of saving and getting financial security later. It's like they're saving first and they're spending the rest. Okay. Not a plan, bad plan. Again, however, I'm complaining because this is not something that the public is screaming for.
Or the government should be doing.
Yeah.
Well, or the state should be doing. And that's not their job.
Yeah, there are a lot of taxes, tax laws out there and tax policies out there that want to encourage people certain behavior. And that's you know, it's not a terrible thing. Long-term care insurance is one of the most heavily tax-leveraged financial products out there. So, and the reason they do that, you know why they do that?
No.
Because they don't want you on Medicaid, right? Medicaid is paying for all those people who are not able to withstand, you know, the high costs of long-term care. So
okay,
that's, you know, not all government incentives are bad. Certainly they incentivize us to buy a house.
Yeah.
And we get to deduct our mortgage interest, right?
Right.
In this case, however, nobody's asking for it. And we've just gone through the federal program and nobody's participating in it. But now Kate Brown and the Oregon legislature think that they're going to do better. This whole concept, anytime the government says, well, we're going to do better than the private sector.
I've never in my lifetime seen the government do something better than the private sector, ever.
All right. So I got another one in the financial industry. Here's a regulation. And it came out. It was in the Obama years. It was from the Department of Labor. Unless most people don't realize, the Department of Labor has jurisdiction over your IRA and out of your IRA account. Department of Labor, your IRA account.
Where's the connection?
But it is. That's the way it's set up. So there's a new ruling, DOL ruling. And by new, I mean the last couple of years. And it's been controversial enough that it gets batted back and forth in terms of, is the Trump administration going to turn it over? Or are they going to kill it? Blah, blah, blah. And the gist of it is people in the financial industry who are opening your IRAs and selling you investments, they're maybe not to be trusted.
You think?
Right? So, no, I don't think.
Some of them.
Yeah, certainly every industry has schmoes, I call them. It doesn't matter if you're a plumber or an attorney or in finance or in radio. Everybody, there's schmoes in every industry. So,
yes.
However, they basically are viewing the financial industry as suspect, and we have to make sure we protect the small and maybe medium-sized investor. All these regulations about doing it's in their best interests, the investor's best interests, not really an issue for most good people in the industry because they're already doing what's best for the client. There are a lot of good people. I mean, I can name an armload full of them. Okay, so they're already doing what's best for the saver, the investor, the client. But now, with the DOL rule, they have to have programs and documentations and layers of this and training of that and oversight, blah, 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 blah. And
more red tape.
How you sell it, how you get your commission, right? How, you know, because there's different ways to sell investments. So, well, maybe well intentioned. However, the small investor in America, they're losing places to go to get
sure,
help.
Yeah.
Because now it's so onerous. Dave, it's so onerous to comply that only the big guys are left and they don't want to open small accounts. Because if you're a smaller, you know, I don't know, we'll use a smaller insurance company that does investments. You're a smaller credit union that does investments. You probably don't have the bandwidth to do all of the DOL ruling regulations.
Sure.
And do all of that administration. And some people are just bowing out. They're bowing out. They're not even going to offer IRAs. And the ones that have, and there's a, you know, there's a franchised investment, and I've looked at their stuff, brokerage house, and they had completely changed how they were doing IRAs, and it was not to the benefit of the small investor. It was higher fees. It was fewer options, higher fees, or we won't do it.
Sounds like government regulations.
All right. So in order to protect the small investor, the government issues this huge pile of regulations that effectively reduces options, which means reduces availability of help and makes it more expensive.
That sounds like government regulations.
Government stories. Infuriating. So, yeah, we can't dive much into that without getting to regulatory, our own regulatory issues. But just speaking of the Department of Labor, I'm not a fan in terms of how it is regulating your IRA.
No.
Your IRA. I mean, why is the Department of Labor stepping in between you and your advisor, right?
Yeah.
Whoever it is, if it's your bank, and there's a lot of names out there. If it's Morgan Stanley or the Edward Jones or Merrill Lynch or whoever it is, anybody who opens your IRA, the Department of Labor is now going to tell them how they can sell it to you, in what manner they can collect their fees, and how much administrative oversight, the controls that they have in place, and that's just a backfire. That's just a backfire.
Yeah.
All right. A couple of dumb government stories. Hey, and we invite you to write in, give us a call, let us know if you've got one to expose that we can talk about in the air. We must have to collect a book. Huh?
Yes.
Dave and Brent's
well,
book
you
of dumb
them
government
the
stories. So we'll try to talk about an advocacy thing that went backwards here in the next segment. This is Brent DeHart along with Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
This is Newsmakers with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Hello and welcome back to Newsmakers with Brent and Dave. You're on 1430 KYKN in the noon hour where we talk about things that affect the Mid-Valley, things that affect our quality of life, things that affect our pocketbook issues, individuals, institutions, and ideas. Today we're kind of ranting at a larger scale. We're talking about things that happen when the government thinks too hard on something.
Yeah, that's a true
fact. Government stories. And I've actually a long list as well of done advocacy stories where the things that people advocate for are contrary to their own public policy goals. That just makes my brain cells explode.
Right.
So we're talking about the MyRA, the Oregon Saves Program, solution in need of a problem. And we talked a little about a Department of Labor thing. It's harder to understand that in the regulations in the finance industry. But when people talk about, hey, we need regulation on Wall Street, you know, you kind of know that, you know, there's some schmoes in Wall Street.
You
know,
like you said, there's schmoes everywhere, right?
So, and I hope that's not a really bad cuss word in some language or something.
I hope not either. I haven't looked
on the radio.
Yeah.
And so, okay, you need to regulate financial markets, banking and this and that. But they'll say regulate Wall Street, and it'll come down to making it harder for you to get an IRA down on Main Street,
mm-hmm.
making it more expensive for you to get an IRA down on Main Street. And it just trickles down, and it affects people's lives. And it just happens in these upper echelons of think tanks, liberal think tanks in Washington. So we had Mike Erdman on yesterday, and he's from the Home Builders Association, and we're talking about land use a little bit. So here, let's look at an example of advocacy in land use. We touched on it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, and let's presume for a minute that we both agree with the land use and how Oregon was set up in the 70s. And that was to draw urban growth boundaries around, you know, municipalities and metropolitan service districts and all that.
You're making me agree with that?
No, let's just say.
Okay.
So, but the motive was, hey, we want to protect our forested lands, right? Our wild lands. We want to protect our farmlands preeminently, right? And to do so, we're not going to end up like Phoenix. We're not going to end up like, you know,
They have a lot of sand to build on.
They have a lot of sand. That's right. We're not going into sand. We're going into some of the richest and productive topsoils in the nation. Right.
But if a farmer wants to sell their farm, just say.
Yeah, he can sell it as a farm, apparently. Anyway, remember you're agreeing with
us. Okay. That's right. Sorry.
So, urban growth boundary. So, those things are designed to grow reasonably, pragmatically over time. And what happens when you have a state that's a one-party state is that reasonably and practically goes out the window. So here we'll use an example right here in Salem. And it was Hazel's Hill, and it was owned by a family, and they wanted to bring it into the city limits and so that it could be developed and into housing and so forth. South Salem.
Right.
It was about 10 years ago, and the 1,000 friends of Oregon, 1,000 friends of whomever, were completely against it. All the land use, the no growth, and no anything people, to stop everything people, came out in droves. Well, Dave, here's the thing. They're the ones that want urban growth boundary. We're agreeing with them.
Right.
So they want urban growth boundary to prevent sprawl. And so that means we need to contain growth, meaning new houses, new apartments, you know, presumably new commercial districts, inside what is designed by our own state plan, land use plan, for growth. We've reserved it for growth.
Right.
So, oh, don't bring it to the city because then it'll get developed and that's evil. Hello? Is that a disconnect?
Yes.
Like, but it's in the urban growth boundary. What do you, you know, and I was a city councilor at the time and I'm thinking, well, you know, the owners could just develop it anyway. They'd be in county land.
Right.
It's like, but they're right surrounded by the city of Salem and they're going to be utilizing our streets and everything else. And they're still going to develop, but they're not going to get any tax money to support our police and fire. Like, what is wrong with you people?
That doesn't make sense.
No, I've been holding this thing in for 10 years.
Apparently.
But what's wrong? That total disconnect. So if you're going to favor a restriction on sprawl, you're going to favor urban growth boundaries, then you should not be demonstrating against growth inside the boundaries.
Right.
You should, yes, please grow inside the boundaries so they don't do this. You know, people need to buy a house. They don't building it on the farmland that you're talking about.
Right.
It makes no sense in the advocacy of land use. Now we're going to look in the same thing now with an urban growth boundary, a need to expand because we're almost out of South Salem land. We're almost out of West Salem land. Inside the Salem Kaiser, we share an urban growth boundary, and we'll have the Mayor Kaiser on eventually. And I'd like to talk to her about because Kaiser has more of a need. They're kind of landlocked.
True.
To expand a little bit, and they're bumping up against the urban growth boundary, the UGB, but they have less. They have more of a need than Salem does, but they have to cooperatively work together.
How often does that expand?
Wow, not very often.
Really?
I do not have it on top of my head, but it has not expanded as last 20 years that I have, not in Salem-Kaiser.
I thought it automatically did every 20 years.
It's a huge process. No.
What?
Yeah. Woodburn got one through not that long ago, but Salem-Kaiser, not as long as I have been aware.
What?
It just doesn't happen. So again, we get back to, is 2% growth uncontrolled growth? 1.5%? I don't think so.
No way.
So this is a natural state of and demographics. Anyway, the urban growth boundary. So you have to be reasonable.
Yes.
So Peter Courtney is our state Senate president, representing big chunks of Salem and beyond. And I was reading an article about how he realizes that he has a supermajority in the Senate, has a supermajority in the House, and there is a risk there. Because really, anytime you pass legislation that doesn't require one vote from the other party, it doesn't usually go well.
No.
Long term. Look at Obamacare.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need any of your votes. And then how many Republicans were elected 2 years later?
Right. Yeah.
So there's a hazard there where they think, well, we can just ignore these, you know, other 23 people or whatever in the legislature because they don't have any say in the matter. And that's a good way to get your party out of power.
Exactly.
So kudos to Senator Courtney for realizing that there has to be some restraint and there has to be some collaboration, there has to be some communication. So
Hopefully, has to be.
Hopefully he'll have some influence there, because we can't just have a legislative session or two where everything gets passed with 100% Democrat Party votes and zero Republican votes.
That's wrong.
Yeah, it is wrong. Best, I'm going to out myself as a moderate or something, but the best legislation should at least appeal in some way to both parties.
Well, I thought they were, both parties were supposed to work the deal out and vote on the final thing.
Most productive session we ever had was the year we had a deadlock tie.
Really?
Right? Yeah. And they had bipartisan leadership in all the major committees.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, we want this. Well, we want this. And how do we get some of this? And so anyway, it was one of the most productive and positive thing for Oregonians. And now we're looking at not just a majority, but a super majority. And of course, that's defined as the ability to raise any tax measure, any money without.
And nobody can fight it?
Yeah, without a vote from the other party, because they have enough votes.
Oh, see, that's wrong.
Yeah. Well, that's what just happened.
That's not government by the people for the people. That's tyranny, pretty much.
Unless you're a Democrat,
it's still just tyranny, even to that side.
So land use.
Let's go back to that one.
The advocates for land use. Come on, people. They have to get with it. They have to, like, don't go be contrary to your own desires. I made this point to some people, League of Conservation Voters, a long time ago, about what is it your people want? You want clean everything, and the earth is our, you know, what's that word? It's our environment for all of us.
Right.
It's our ecosystem. There we go. So the earth is everyone's ecosystem, but they wouldn't be favor having an oil refinery in America, right? No, we can't have oil refineries because, you know, they're dirty and they're ugly and they produce gasoline and that's greenhouse, blah, 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 blah. Well, guess what? People didn't stop driving. They're not going to stop driving just because you don't want. So America became more and more independent, not just on foreign oil, but on foreign finished product.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have to import refined gasoline from places that have no EPA. I'm sitting there in a room full of, you know, all the voters. It's all about the environment. I'm like, people, the earth is our infrastructure. The earth is our ecosystem. And you're making these refineries be built in Russia and in China and Malaysia and Venezuela, all of our friends. And there's no EPA there.
No.
You think that there's controls on water, purification and deforestation and on and on. So, I mean, if you had it right, you demand that all refineries are built in America where we have the environmental protections.
Yes.
We have an EPA, and you can force the oil companies to do it cleanly and make sure there's no discharges and contamination and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, let's shove it off into countries that have no regulation. That's when advocacy kind of goes sideways. So whether it's the League of Conservation Voters or it is the 1,000 Friends and Land Use, you got to watch the unintended consequences and stay within the brackets of your goal. This is Newsmakers on KYKN 1430, Salem's Listening.
Newsmakers continues with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart along with Dave Bourne. We're talking about Salem and Kaiser, Marion and Polk counties, about local issues that affect your world and your pocketbook and your quality of life. And today we're talking specifically. About government regulations and advocacy, things that backfire. So, and if you have a story, actually, we'd like to hear it. KYKN Newsmakers. @gmail.com. Send me an email. We'll collect these stories. We'll elucidate the public on dumb government stories. KYKN Newsmakers @gmail.com. come. We're talking a little bit about land use advocates and how sometimes they just, the problem is the people in the middle kind of get away because they're frustrated and you end up with the people that are not reasonable.
Right.
Right. I want to listen to your point of view, but you're not reasonable. And I don't have time for people that aren't reasonable.
Yeah.
That can't make a reasoned thought, can't compromise, don't even see that what they're saying doesn't make any sense. Like, don't build inside the urban growth boundary when it's designed by our land use laws that you favor for a growth to occur inside. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on because I got another one.
Oh, boy.
One of my favorite topics in Oregon. And if only I was king of Oregon, there's so many things we could do. And one of them is the ultimate sustainable, renewable resource that Mother Nature's granted us is the trees.
Yeah.
And we look at these fires. It's happening. It's happening in Oregon every single year. Devastating fires in California.
Yeah.
There's real life solutions that we can do for these things in management. But people who are not reasonable will not allow them to happen. So we live in a world, Dave, where there are practices that are sustainably or that is certifiably sustainable.
Okay.
Right? And I had a friend work for Boise Cascades. Boise Cascade was, you know, in the timber, paper, box, you know, business. And he was telling me, and this was years ago, that they had a couple of their large parcels. They're privately owned and not state or federal forested. And they are certified sustainable, which means they are harvesting it and replanting it and growing it at a pace in which is completely sustainable.
And that's where we get all our boxes and our toilet paper and our paper to print on and
yeah,
and all that stuff, right?
Right. So question is, if we live in a world where we have sustainable forestry practices, why are we being prevented from practicing them?
That's a good point, Brent.
Right. And so there was a bill, and this was also years ago. Kevin Cameron was our state representative, and he was briefing us on a bill that in Tillamook forests, they wanted to harvest at 80% of the sustainable level. So mind you, harvest is harvest and replant and regrow
right.
in a cyclical manner and utilize the natural resources, which is as natural as you can get, sustainable and renewable. So 80% of the sustainable number. Didn't go anywhere in the legislature.
What?
Didn't go anywhere. Instead, they wanted to pass Measure 66 and 67 and raise taxes on businesses and rich people.
Wow.
And all that. So I could never understand when Kitzhaber was governor, and let's say you, because I know you did agree with everything Kitzhaber wanted to do, at least in terms of healthcare and education. Somehow, they didn't put a two and two together that, hey, if there's more enterprise, if there's more business, if there's more industry, then there's more tax money and we can pay for everything I want to do in education and healthcare.
Right.
Instead, it's just, oh, let's just pay for it. Or, I know, let's just pay for it and raise taxes on existing industry. So meanwhile, they're blocking initiatives to get more water out of the Columbia in eastern Oregon to do exactly what the state of Washington is doing and have more agriculture. Right. More agricultural activity, a whole new area of agricultural economic money. Hey, that's tax money. But they couldn't put those two. No, it's water, so therefore we can't let them use it. Same thing with the forests. We've gone crazy. So, I mean, we're talking about, oh, yeah, it's going to sequester the CO2 in the trees until they burn down.
Right, then what do you do?
And then they burn up, and it, I mean, it's frightening to think of how much CO2 is released into the atmosphere when thousands and thousands of acres get burned up in forest fires, right?
Yeah.
So,
and all that smoke, oh my goodness.
Yeah, and there are things we can do. We can thin the fuel. We can harvest the burned down trees. We can get fire breaks. A lot of things that we can do is just like, you can't get anywhere because of the advocates. And the advocates then are getting to a situation where there's more and more forest fires and the forests that they're trying to protect burn to the ground. And the animals that live there and the streams that run through that, everything bad they don't want to have happen, they're creating it.
Right.
They're creating it. So the environment for this squirrel and for these birds and for the deer and everything else gets burned to the crisp. And then there's erosion problems, which goes into the streams. Mm-hmm. And then our streams and rivers aren't as clean and everything else because the forest burned down instead of letting us management.
Makes no sense.
No. So those kinds of things makes Brent's brain cells explode.
Mine are starting to.
So.
Jeez.
I know. And so here's the thing about Oregon. We have two things that we have over virtually everybody else. We have trees and we have a spectacular coastline and a beautiful ocean,
right,
which is pretty clean compared to, you know, some others of the world. So what are we not doing? We're not using industry that has to do with the oceans. I mean, we have a fisheries industry and this and that. Oh, but we could become a worldwide leader in marine farming, aqua farming, aquamarine, right? We could grow shellfish and we could grow cucumbers, sea cucumbers, and send it off to the Pacific Rim. This is where I'm going to be king of Oregon.
Right.
Oregon State, love you. Let's escalate them to the Scripps Institute of the Northwest and take that clean water along a coast, and formerly forested counties along the coast can grow things that we can sell, living things, sustainably, that we can sell to the Pacific Rim.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, is it that hard? Can we not find a leader in Oregon that can think in terms of using our natural resources that are sustainable, renewable?
Yeah, exactly.
Inexhaustible.
Yeah.
The ocean is there, right? The sunlight is there that grows the seaweed that feeds these things and on and on and on.
I'm still trying
to grow the trees.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm still trying to figure out why they limit crabbing along the coast. And just along our coast. They don't do it all the way down through California or up into Washington. Just our coast. They limit it.
I don't know. We'll have to get somebody on.
I'm trying to figure out why.
Well, we don't want to run out of time.
We are out of time, but.
All right. Anyway.
One minute.
1 minute. Okay, we got a minute to go. So, dumb government stories. Dumb government stories. Please send them to us at kyknnewsmakers@gmail.com. KYKNNewsmakers@gmail.com, and we'll share them with him. We'll share them with everybody.
Yeah.
And if you have a advocacy thing we've been talking about, what kind of backfires from what originally wasn't intended as a way to get to a goal is now just left with people who are no longer reasonable, and frankly, their policies are destructive to their goal. Look at our forests.
Right.
I'd rather burn them down than let you manage them. Them down.
Five
and
more
all
brain
that CO2
cells just blew
go
up
into our atmosphere than to let you manage them. It's crazy. It's completely renewable. We need to use it and create jobs, create tax money, and then you can pay for all of the liberal nanny state things that you want.
Right.
All right. Hey, you're listening to 1430 KYKN. This is Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne. This is Newsmakers. We hope to have you back tomorrow. It's 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring, bound by wild desire.
This has been Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.